爸妈妈妈妈 Everybody calls him black even though he's actually half white. But he can walk on water and he puts his pants on two legs at a time because he is the Messiah. He has come to save us all. Hail Obama. Who you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and motherfucking moan. Dig in your ears and hold on tight. You can shove your opinion up your ass, that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. And don't forget, the ever-present, most likely third possibility that I will hit the microphone with objects here in the studio and make lots of noise to piss Randy off, because that's what I do. Well, you move! Damn it! Not you, this extra. It's rolling down the hallway now. I'm choking to death and dying. This is stating the obvious, the weapons platform from which I launched that cruise missile my intellect and homes in on to destroy stupid motherfucking states all around the goddamn world. Little fucking filthy statists. They're running around like they're like fucking maggots in my fucking food. He's gonna build roads. He's gonna build roads. Why aren't there more laws? Fuck you all. So I was trying to get the football out of the way because I'm not sitting down for this episode. And that's what I was hitting the microphone with. And then the football goes rolling out the door. I had the door open to the studio. Goes rolling out of the fucking door. Down the hallway. Greetings! What's up, y'all? I am the Great One himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society, 10 fucking years of podcasting. This is episode 240 of Stating the Obvious, 250th episode coming up. I don't know if I'll do anything special for 250 or not. I mean, it could happen, but I'm not saying it will. And have my mug of hot tea right here. Hot tea, because I like hot teas. Alright, I got a lot of shit to talk about today. This is going to be... What? Oh, thank you. Today is July the 8th, 2015. And if you want to send us an email, it's God. That's dog spelled backwards. God at CYNLIBSOC.com on the interwebs. In the control room over there, reminding me to do all this stuff, is the lovely and adorable Randy. You can find us on the internet, CYNLIBSOC.com on the interwebs, or just Google for Cynical Libertarian Society. What else? Yes, and the theme song for Stating the Obvious is You Know I'm Right. It's by David Gilmour, guitar player for Pink Floyd. Extremely left-wing motherfucker. Extremely rich. And of course, you know, rich people love to be left-wingers and talk about, oh, the poor, downtrodden, poor people. But I notice they don't give up any of their millions and millions of dollars to help those poor people. Fucking statist. Anyway, David Gilmour, seriously intense statist motherfucker. Great guitar player, great songwriter. It's a great album, About Face, came out in 1984. Highly recommend you checking it out. He has three solo albums, all of them are good. All right. Randy, did I forget anything else important? Well, that's true. The only important thing on this show is my opinion. I have so fucking much. Let's start over here. Let's start with the interwebs. Let's do this, get it out of the way. I like this. I found this via... Some of these links, like these first three or four links I'm going to talk about, I found these via Captain Capitalism's blog. It's captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. Aaron Cleary, I plug him a lot. And if you're not reading his website, his blog, you need to get over there and read it. Anyhow, he put up some linkage and led to these things. This is interesting because, of course, we've just been having, we, meaning all of us in this fucking nation, have just been having this ongoing conversation about the Confederate flag. Because, oh my God, you fucking filthy-ass Yankees who are so fucking... You know, just, again, who was it? was it the Confederacy or was it the Union that put Japanese people in concentration camps? Was it the Confederacy or was it the Union that sterilized black people against their will? Was it the Confederacy or was it the Union that conducted the Tuskegee experiments? Was it the Confederacy or the Union that gave us Detroit? And of course, just another reminder, Abraham Lincoln, scumbag piece of shit that he was, even never freed a fucking slave, but you think he did. And remember, he was also a Republican. Remember, the Democrats are the Southerners who wanted to keep slavery around. Every time you vote Democrat, that's who you're voting for. The Democrat Party was the people from the South who wanted to keep slavery legal. Anyhow, July 4th, 1863, the Confederate stronghold of Vicksburg, Mississippi, Mississippi, is surrendered to the Union forces led by General Ulysses S. Grant. Because of this, Southerners, being as strange as they are about the Civil War, yeah, imagine that, we're really strange about the Civil War. Anyway, Vicksburg would not celebrate the 4th of July again until World War II. I'm serious. July 4th, 1875. White Democrats in Vicksburg, still bitter over the way the war turned out, murdered several freed black people in the town. By the 21st century, Democrats will have perfected having African Americans who are obedient to the Democrat Party machine harass free-thinking black people instead of soiling their hands with their own dirty work. And it's true, the Democrats hate black people, and yet they've managed to get all of you black people to hate any black person that doesn't vote Democrat for them. It's beautiful. I mean, they just use you as voting cattle. And you're so fucking dumb, you just keep falling for it. I've said it 100 times on this cast. If there's any group of people in the United States that should be capable of recognizing slavery when they see it, you would think it would be black people. But nope, you motherfuckers, you just keep voting Democrat and you keep getting your welfare checks and you keep playing the victim card. Although women are going to give you a strong run for the victim card, obviously. All right, speaking of women and victim cards, here we go. Portland, Maine. Ah, yes. Yankeeville, Maine. The mother of a man who tried to launch a firework off the top of his head for July 4th and was killed instantly said Monday she's advocating for stricter controls about who can use the explosives. Devon Staples, 22 years old. And his friends had been drinking. Of course they have. And setting off fireworks. Saturday night in a backyard in Staples' eastern Maine hometown. Ah, yes, Yankee Land. Callis? C-A-L-A-I-S? Whoever the fuck it is. It's Yankee Land. Who gives a fuck? When the accident, it was an accident. See, he was accidentally drinking. And then he accidentally took an explosive device and accidentally put it on his head. It's an accident. This is not an accident. This is called natural selection, and we need more of it. Okay, these are genes. This is DNA that needs to be removed from the gene pool. Okay, we should be getting more of this, not less. All right, here we go. When the accident happened with a reloadable fireworks mortar tube, police have said. Staples' mother, Kathleen Staples, said she is going to reach out to lawmakers. Anytime someone tells you they're going to reach out, you should always reach back and check your fucking wallet, because reach out, that's another one of those terms that means some low-life, cocksucking, motherfucking status pieces of shit who are sitting around going, but who would build the roads, want more of your money. She's going to reach out to lawmakers about the possibility of tighter controls over fireworks. The state should consider requiring safety training courses before allowing someone to use them, she said. She compared fireworks with other regulated items such as cars and guns. What about regulated items like alcohol, since they were, you know, drunk while the... accidentally drunk while he accidentally put an explosive device on his head. Quote, at least it'd be a little more than, here you go, that's an explosive. They didn't just hand me a license and put me in a car, unquote, Staples said. Devon Staples also lived in the Orlando, Florida area. Well, okay, yep. We make a Confederacy joke here, but remember, it's Florida, which is sort of like the strange part of the Confederacy. Where he worked as a performer, portraying Disney characters such as Gaston from Beauty and the Beast and Goofy, his mother said. So, all right, he's 22 years old, he's drunk, he doesn't have enough sense not to put an explosive device on his head, and he probably has a worthless college degree. By the book Worthless by Aaron Clary, available on Amazon.com, and last month was Worthless Degree Awareness Month. So, his job is working at Disneyland and portraying Goofy. She said he believed, because she knew what was happening in his intoxicated mind at the time, she said he believed the firework was a dud that was unlikely to hurt him. State Fire Marshal Joe Thomas said that is unlikely, because the mortar had been fired once previously, and he, quote, can't imagine someone would anticipate that it was a dud, unquote. Well, maybe he accidentally anticipated it was a dud, because he was, of course, accidentally drunk when he accidentally put this mortar on his head. Staples' death is the first fireworks fatality in Maine since it legalized fireworks on January the 1st, 2012. Well, I would say that is a problem, because if it's been that long, I mean, that's what, this is 2015, 34, I mean, that's a year, and that's 2.5 years, and only one set of DNA has been removed from the gene pool in 2.5 years. This is what I'm saying. We need to crank this. We don't need to restrict access to fireworks. We need to give fireworks to everybody. That would solve the problem. Democrat, of course, who's going to jump on board with this one other than the Democrats? Democrat Representative Michael Laoji or some shit, a retired fire chief from Lewiston who has pushed to repeal Maine's fireworks law in the past, said Monday that he is overjoyed that this person is dead because this will help him further his political agenda. Oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't the actual text, that was the subtext. Pushed to repeal, blah, 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 said Monday he's considering trying to introduce another measure next year, but acknowledged it faces long odds. Retailers have fiercely opposed any effort in the legislature to restrict the use of fireworks. Right, because you see, notice how this is blamable on capitalism. See, the reason we can't make fireworks illegal is because the evil capitalist pigs who make money selling fireworks are so opposed. They are fiercely opposed, and we just can't get anything done because they're so fiercely opposed. Because you know what? How big is Maine? It's not that big. Maine is like the size of a county in Texas. How many fucking fireworks retailers can there possibly fucking be? Lahoney Democrat from, you know, Democrat who is representative of the party that wanted to keep slavery legal, said even a ban might not prevent injuries and deaths. Well, yes, you can ban fireworks all day long. People will still die. You see, you can't prevent people from dying. Quote, they're going to say, well, you can't regulate stupidity. And it's true, you can't. But the fact of the matter is, you have to try something. I'm not giving up, said this Democrat piece of shit who represents the political party that wanted to keep slavery legal. No, you can't regulate stupidity, and in fact, you shouldn't. We need to let the stupid people blow themselves up. Again, this is cause for celebration. This is not something to get upset about. Okay, let's see. Skipping that for a minute. That has nothing to do with this show. This is an article from the FIRE website, Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. The title of this is Fear and Bureaucracy, a Foul Symbiosis. So I want to read this one paragraph. I'm going to put links to all of this stuff in the show notes. Perhaps the most insidious effect of trigger warnings has been on the study of criminal law. In describing a growing trend at law schools, Janine Sunk, professor at Harvard Law School, points out that one teacher she knows was recently asked by a student not to use the word violate in class, as in, does this conduct violate the law, because the word was triggering. She notes that many incoming law professors are afraid to teach rape law at all, excluding the important area of law entirely because it's not worth the risk of complaints of discomfort by students. You know, the up-and-coming generations, the millennials, and God help us, their children, all of this shit you little fuckers have, where everything in the universe has to revolve around you being emotionally comfortable. Just this whole thing. So, hang on. Needed a drink of tea. The biggest problem in the universe is a podcast, Dick Masterson and Maddox. I've talked about it before. I'm talking about it again. If you are not listening to the Biggest Problem in the Universe podcast, you are missing out. I am telling you, I cannot recommend you listen to this enough. It is funnier than fuck. Holy shit, is it funny. It is fucking funny. Speaking of things that are funny, let me write this down or I'll forget. Biggest Problem. Why am I writing this down? You should be writing this down. What? Well, yes, I know you are mainly just here to look pretty, but you could do something other than looking cute. Speaking of funny things, there is this web series that came out some odd years ago, and it ended because the place they were filming it went out of business or something like that. Anyway, it's called The Baristas. It's a little... It's like Dr. Horrible sing-along blog or something like that. Right, so it's this web series that they're putting on YouTube and doing on the internet. And I sat down, I downloaded all the episodes from YouTube and burned them onto a DVD so I could sit on my ass and watch them on the television because I hate watching TV on the computer. Anyway, my God, it is so fucking funny. When I watched it years ago, it was funnier than shit and it just sort of went out of my memory. And I thought about it the other day and I rewatched it. Holy fuck, is it funny. I'll put in a link. And on YouTube, you go to YouTube and some of these episodes only have like 200 or 300 views. I can't believe it. I'm telling you, this show is fucking hilarious. I'm so sad that they had to stop making it. But go watch it. It's funnier than shit. All right. Biggest problem. Funnier than shit podcast. And in each episode, they bring in what they think is the biggest problem in the universe. You can go to the website and vote what's the biggest problem. And in a recent, well, not a recent episode, because I'm way behind the way I am on everything. It was on, I think it was episode 46, 47, 48, something in that range. They brought in as a problem people who do all of this bacon worship, right? Oh, I'm so into bacon. Oh, bacon is so cool. And they're talking about this and they're talking it through, and Maddox and Dick Masterson come across this conclusion, which is very much what I've been saying, which I think is right. People in our society today are constantly looking for emotional safety. And that's why we have all of this stuff like bacon worship. Oh, I love bacon. Do you love bacon? Because talking about bacon is fairly safe. Unless, of course, there's a vegan in the room, in which case you're going to hear about how animals are murdered and all this other shit. But you people out there, you're constantly looking. Think about it, for those of you who are anarcho-capitalist, think about the conversations you have with your statist friends and just how fucking safe they are and how it's just these same tropes repeated over and over and how nobody's ever allowed to disagree with any of this stuff, right? Think about how many times have you heard Maddox did a great job destroying the myth of the wage gap, you know, how women make 77 cents. If you go to the great best page in the universe, you can find that over there. But you just hear the same shit. For you, whatever it is, one out of five women is raped. And don't you dare question that. You hear the same shit about how women make 77 cents for a dollar a man makes. Don't you dare question that, right? You hear the same shit about how Southerners are all racist. And the Civil War, which wasn't actually a civil war, was about slavery. And don't you dare question that. And these are all the things, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse, because now you can't say violate in a classroom in law school because somebody's being triggered by this and they don't feel safe. And every conversation in our society is simply dominated by these bullshit tropes that have no basis in reality. And anything at all that conflicts with the narrative as it has been handed out by the sheeple, anything that makes any sheeple uncomfortable emotionally or intellectually, anything that challenges any aspect of who they are, it has to be stomped out and silenced. Because, again, they don't have social skills. They don't have anything. They don't know how to deal with differences of opinion. And yet they think they're the smartest generation ever. But they're completely emotionally, psychologically, intellectually incapable of dealing with any opinion that does not exactly fit with the opinion they have now. And these are the most open-minded, tolerant cocksuckers that have ever walked the face of the earth. And if you don't believe me, just ask them. They'll tell you. Now, speaking of sucking cock. Wait, did I finish that? I did finish that. Wait, I just heard my phone go off. Oh, wait, hang on. All right, never mind. What is it, too? I bitched about this already. Never mind. With chicks and super That's super cute. I'm super busy. I'm super smartest generation ever. Whatever. I have super communication skills, even though nobody really knows what the fuck you're talking about. Alright, here we go. Are diamonds really a girl's best friend? What your ring may say about your marriage. If you like it, you should definitely put a ring on it, but maybe not too big of a ring. First few things set engaged couples into the boxing ring faster than just how much to spend on their wedding. But a new study from Emory University economics professors indicates that moderation in all things leads to a longer union. A diamond is forever and other fairy tales, the relationship between wedding expense and marriage duration, a new study from Andrew M. Francis and Hugo M. Mialon, isn't just one of the first looks at how wedding spending correlates with marriage duration. It's also an indictment of the persuasive powers of the wedding industry and my shitty reading skills. The pair surveyed 3,000 U.S. adults who had once been married to members of the opposite sex and discovered you should spend no more than $2,000 on the engagement ring. Men who shelled out between $2,000 to $4,000 on engagement rings were 1.3 times more likely to get divorced than men who spent between $500 and $2,000. But that doesn't mean you should just use a plastic ring you got out of the gumball machine either. Spending less than $500 on a ring also led to higher divorce rates. Keep your wedding cost under control. Spending more than $20,000 on a wedding led to divorce 3.5 times more frequently for women than for those who spent between $5,000 and $10,000. The average cost of an American wedding is nearly $30,000, according to The Knot. And maybe a reception at a fast food restaurant is warranted. Spending less than $1,000 on a wedding decreased chances of divorce. Now, that's actually from the, who is this, Today, NBC News Today website. So that's where I first found it. Now, here is the actual study. I'm going to post the actual study on the website so that you can go and download that shit and read it yourself, because this is something I've often talked about in the past, is how you stupid people, especially those of you in the smartest generation ever, don't really know what a study is. Like, whenever I say, well, you know, the study said such, and how do you know? I read in the newspaper. Okay, well, did you actually see the study? Well, yeah. Okay, so where is it? Well, it's right here. No, that's a newspaper article. Or that's an article on the website about a study. See, what I just read to you was about the study. Now I want to read to you some stuff from the actual study. This is a fairly short one. It's only 17 pages, and a lot of it's graphs. We're not going to read 17 pages. I just want to hit some highlights here. The wedding industry has grown substantially throughout the 20th century, in part due to the rise of consumerism and industry efforts to commodify love and romance. Yes, and thankfully, now that we have legalized gay marriage, we can commodify that shit as well. One example of this was the emergence of bridal magazines, especially Brides, which played an important role in developing a platform for many service providers to reach consumers and in promoting the necessity of a lavish wedding for a fairy tale marriage. In 1959, Brides recommended that couples set aside 2 months to prepare for their wedding and published a checklist with 22 tasks for them to complete. By the 1990s, the magazine recommended 12 months of wedding preparation and published a checklist with 44 tasks to complete. Let's keep in mind, women are strong and independent, and so whenever they think that they need expensive diamond rings and that they need expensive weddings and they need to spend all this money on their fairy tale, see, that's their strength and independence. They're not being manipulated by the corporations or anything like that. They're making these decisions all on their own. They want the fairy tale princess wedding because they're so strong and independent and they think for themselves. Another example of industry efforts to commodify love and romance is that of marketing campaigns for diamond engagement rings. Several of the most well-known campaigns were by De Beers, the global diamond company that uses slave labor to extract diamonds from the earth and, of course, cleans up their ore using toxic chemicals to get the diamonds out and all this other shit. But that's okay because, again, you know, your woman, she may be a fucking tree-hugger environmentalist bitch, but when it comes to getting a rock, she really doesn't care how much environmental damage is involved in getting that diamond engagement ring. Because the environment can go fuck itself, right? This is her wedding. This is her special day. It's all about her. Huh. Actually, everything is about her, isn't it? So, fuck the environment, buy the rock. That should be the new De Beers slogan. Fuck the environment, buy the rock. In the late 1930s, De Beers created the slogan, "A diamond is forever," which was rated the number one slogan of the century by Advertising Age. The campaign aimed to link the purchase of a diamond engagement ring to the hope of a long-lasting marriage. In the 1980s, De Beers introduced another influential campaign which sought to increase the standard for how much should be spent on an engagement ring with slogans such as, quote, "Isn't 2 months' salary a small price to pay for something that lasts forever?" unquote. Who the fuck would fall for that? Oh, actually, lots of people would. These marketing efforts were effective. Prior to World War II, in Western countries, only 10% of engagement rings contained a diamond. By the end of the century, about 80% did. In 2012, total expenditures on diamond rings were roughly $7 billion in the United States. However, the industry message that associates wedding expenditures with longer-lasting marriages has never been statistically evaluated. Dun, dun, dun. Then we have the data and methods section. So another thing, a scientific paper, right? When somebody tells you, I saw a study in the newspaper, I saw a study on a website, that's not a study. That's somebody talking about it. So this is an actual study. See, at the top, it has the names of the people who did the study. Then down here, first it has introduction. That's part of what we just read. And then it has a section called data and methods, which is where they explain to you how many people they polled and how they got the data and all these other things that you never find out from reading about it on someone's blog post. Then we have the third section, which is called results. Now again, we got the sort of watered down, rephrased for stupid people, adults, from the NBC Today website. Here are the actual results from a scientific paper. This is what a study actually sounds like when you read it. Table 2 displays population-weighted results of the Cox Proportional Hazard Model predicting marital dissolution. We present hazard ratios from bivariate models with no controls and multivariate models stratified by gender of respondent. An estimated hazard ratio higher, lower than 1 indicates that a predictor is associated with a greater, lesser hazard of divorce. In bivariate regressions, having no engagement ring and having wedding expenses below $1,000 are each associated with increases in the hazard of divorce, while spending $8,000 or more on an engagement ring is associated with a decrease in the hazard of divorce. This appears to be consistent with the relationship between wedding expenses and marriage duration posited by wedding industry advertising. However, the big picture changes in multivariate regressions. Spending between $2,000 and $4,000 on an engagement ring is significantly associated with an increase in the hazard of divorce in the sample of men. Specifically, in the sample of men, spending between $2,000 and $4,000 on an engagement ring is associated with a 1.3 times greater hazard of divorce as compared to spending between $500 and $2,000. Furthermore, spending $1,000 or less on the wedding ring is significantly associated with a decrease in the hazard of divorce in the sample of all persons and in the sample of men, and spending $20,000 or more. $20,000 for a fucking ring. $20,000 or more on the wedding. Oh, for the wedding, not the ring. Whew. Spending $20,000 or more on the wedding is associated with an increase in the hazard of divorce in the sample of women. In particular, as compared with spending between $5,000 and $10,000 on the wedding, spending less than $1,000 is associated with half the hazard of divorce in the sample of men, and spending $20,000 or more is associated with 1.6 times the hazard of the divorce in the sample of women. Do you notice how this is a little more complicated to understand than the bullshit that we read from the Today? And so far, yet we still haven't heard this. Remember, over here, it claims, we heard this claim, spending more than $20,000 on a wedding led to divorce 3.5 times more frequently for women. That's what it says on to Today. We haven't heard that yet in the actual study. This is why anytime someone says to you, I saw a study and the study said such and such, they probably didn't really see a study, because most people can't understand. Most people listening to this, if they're still with us, they don't understand a fucking thing I'm saying. This is all Greek, right? Nobody can understand this shit. So people, when they tell you that they read a study that said such and such, no, they really didn't. They just heard someone else talking about it. Totally different thing. And the other people talking about it may have no idea how to interpret that information. Table 3 displays population-weighted results of the Cox Proportional Hazard Model predicting marital dissolution for the recently married subsample. This table indicates that spending between $2,000 and $4,000 on an engagement ring is significantly associated with an increase in the hazard of divorce in the sample of all persons, while spending less than $500 is associated with an increase in the hazard of divorce in the sample of women. Moreover, spending $1,000 or less on the wedding is significantly associated with a decrease in the hazard of divorce in the sample of all persons. Samples of men and sample of women. While spending $20,000 or more is significantly associated with an increase in the hazard of divorce in the sample of women. In particular, in the sample of women, the hazard of divorce associated with spending more than $20,000 on a wedding is 3.5 times higher. There it is, we found the magical 3.5 times. I wasn't saying it wasn't there, I was just saying we hadn't got to it yet. Spending 3.5 times higher than the hazard of divorce associated with spending between $5,000 and $10,000. So let's take a brief pause here. Yeah, spend a little less money. Oh, I'm going to spend all this. Oh, it's my special day. I'm going to spend so much money. No, you're going to go further and further. Now, none of this is rocket science, because look, the more money you spend on the wedding, the more debt you're going to fucking have. The more you got to worry about debt as a married couple, the more that's going to cause stress in the marriage. Also, another part of the analysis I would submit for your examination is that any woman who needs a wedding that cost more than, what, 17, 18 bucks is, all right, any woman who needs a wedding that costs more than $20,000, I mean, this is going to be a high-maintenance woman. And the odds of you keeping a woman happy long-term, if she's high-maintenance, I mean, they're going to go down. It doesn't matter how fucking awesome you are, because remember, you go girlism, and she thinks that as she gets fatter, she gets more attractive. She thinks as she gets older, she gets more attractive. So she's got all this fucking drama going on in her head that necessitated her having this fairy tale princess white wedding to begin with. No matter who the fuck you are, you're not going to be able to satisfy her mental, emotional, trigger-warned fantasies for an extended period of time. At some point, she's going to need some different cock, and your marriage is going to fall apart. Or, you know, she's going to, well, I'm just not happy, I'm just not satisfied, blah, 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 right? Other interesting results emerge in tables 2 and 3. In the sample of all persons, greater differences in age and education between husband and wife, reporting that one... Wait, okay. In the sample of all persons, greater differences in age and education between husband and wife, and reporting that one's partner's looks were important in the decision to marry, are both significantly associated with a higher hazard of divorce. So if you got married because of what someone looks like, or if there's a greater age difference and difference in education, then you're more likely to get divorced. Now, again, it's not rocket science, but sometimes apparently we need scientists to tell us things that should be common sense to anybody with a fucking brain. On the other hand, relatively high household income, regularly attending religious services, having a child with one's partner, relatively high wedding attendance, and going on a honeymoon are all significantly associated with a lower hazard of divorce. Thus, the evidence suggests that the types of weddings associated with lower likelihood of divorce are those that are relatively inexpensive, but also high in attendance. Table 4 explores... Oh, look at this. I haven't read this ahead. I swear to God, have not read this. God doesn't exist, I know. I swear on my dead grandmother's ashes. I haven't read this ahead. This part here, total virgin territory for me. Table 4, speaking... Yeah, whatever. No, the chick who was texting me, she was blowing me off. Yeah, so I'm not going to be fucking her tonight or this week. It's okay. I'm used to it. Yet, you know, Randy, if I had a dollar for every woman I haven't had sex with, there's 7 billion people on the planet, so 3.5 billion of them are women. So if I had a dollar for every woman I haven't had sex with, I would have about what? $342, because there's like, what, 342 women I haven't fucked? Oh, anyway, has nothing to do with anything. Table 4 explores her vagina. Table 4 explores wedding-related debt, stress, as one possible mechanism underlying the positive associations we find between marital disillusion and spending on the engagement ring and wedding. In this sample of women, so I predicted that the debt was a factor. We will now see if this study backs up the thesis I just threw out or not. Because again, I don't know. I haven't read this yet. In the sample of women spending between $2,000 and $4,000 on the engagement ring is associated with 2 to 3 times the odds of reporting being stressed about wedding-related debt relative to spending between $500 and $2,000. Duh. Furthermore, in the sample of all persons, sample of men, and sample of women, spending less... Hold on, I'm reading a footnote. Interesting. Furthermore, in the sample of all persons, sample of men, and sample of women, spending less than $1,000 on the wedding is associated with an 82% to 93% decrease in odds of reporting being stressed about wedding-related debt relative to spending between $5,000 and $10,000. If wedding expenditures are indeed associated with debt stress, then it is possible that wedding expenses raise the likelihood of marital disillusion, given that prior literature suggests a link between economic stress and marital disillusion. Duh. It says here in the footnote, we also ran regressions showing that, conditional on having a honeymoon, the amount spent on the honeymoon was not associated with the hazard of divorce. Having a honeymoon was associated with a lower hazard of divorce, regardless of how much the honeymoon cost. So apparently you can splurge like a motherfucker on the honeymoon and it's okay. Conclusion. A actual legitimate scientific study will have a conclusion section. That's one way you know that it's an actual study. Which of course doesn't mean not all studies are true, not all studies are valid, not all studies are reproducible, all that other shit. But again, notice how this is different from what's presented to the third grade reading level public via NBC Today's website. Conclusion: the wedding industry has consistently sought to link wedding spending with long-lasting marriage. Gee, imagine that. It's kind of like the military-industrial complex. Sure, they sure work hard at linking having roads and not being killed by terrorists with buying lots of military gear. The prison industrial complex has consistently sought to link incarceration with safety. The police industrial complex has consistently sought to link safety with giving them more SWAT teams. Speaking of SWAT teams, if we have time, I'll get to the SWAT team. All right, we'll have time if I fucking get my shit going. This paper is the first to examine this relationship statistically. We find that marriage duration is either not associated or inversely associated with spending on the engagement ring and wedding ceremony. Overall, our findings provide little evidence to support the validity of the wedding industry's general message that connects expensive weddings with positive marital outcomes. In future research, it may be useful to construct a population representative longitudinal sample of dating couples, following them through multiple stages of their relationship and gathering prospective information on wedding expenses and marital equality. And after that, there's a whole bunch of pages of, which are still loading, there's a bunch of pages of charts and graphs and data and stuff like that, instead of just, you know, bullshit. Mm-hmm. What else do I got here? All that's done. Okay, goodbye to that. How are we on time, Randy? Ah, shit. All right, that's cool. SWAT teams. So, I worked the 4th of July. I was at the 4th of July. I did work it. I was at the 4th of July events here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. The SWAT team's armored truck was there. I was feeling very safe. And apparently, we were on high alert. I love here in the People's Republic of Fort Collins. There are many people who work for the city who very desperately want a terrorist attack on Fort Collins. So we're out there working, and these people from the city are showing up going, okay, we're all on high alert. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? We're on high alert. Everywhere that people are gathering today, we have to be on high alert. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. Can you go and attempt to dump these scare tactics on somebody else? This Then we have the statist, because of course government employees are usually statist. I get so much material from these people. So a group of people who I think were, God forbid, the campus crusaders, they're Christian types. This goes back to the Maddox-Dick Masterson conversation about Bacon, where they're talking about how this is safe, and how they also talked about how there was these groups of people, which we talk about this all the time here. There are some groups of people that it's just totally okay to attack and assault, you know, and insult and verbally beat them up and everything. So these Christians show up, and of course they're Christians, so you can harass them. And they're sitting up their tents in the park, and they got their barbecue grill. And all these fucking state employees are like having convulsions. Like they have tents. They're sitting up tents. They're in the park. Well, they must be breaking some laws. They have to move. I'm thinking to myself, Jesus fucking Christ. They're putting up some goddamn tents and a barbecue grill. It's a goddamn fucking 4th of July party in the goddamn park that their fucking tax money paid for. What kind of fucking law can they possibly be breaking? So then, we're continuing to work. Here comes the train. Speaking of Fort Collins traditions. And we see some Mormons. Oh, God forbid. Mormons. Oh. So, one of these city employees, who is very well known for just being as fucking left-wing statist as you can be, fucking trigger warning and terrified for the children, and everybody's a pedophile, and she's so open-minded and tolerant and diverse and multicultural, and she's caring and all this other stuff. She looks at that, she goes, why are there Mormons here? Mormons shouldn't be here. They shouldn't be allowed here. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. There's your goddamn tolerance and fucking diversity for you. You goddamn left-wing statist. You're just, yeah, I guarantee you, just with your fucking hatred of Mormons, your hatred of Southerners, your hatred of Christians. But oh my God, Muslims who rape 14-year-old girls and cut their fucking heads off because they're not virgins anymore. Oh, you fucking love them. You're just fucking in love with the Muslims because they stone women to death and all this other shit. They're basically just a bunch of fucking animals. But sure do hate those fucking Mormons because, my God, they play board games and shit. Those evil fucking Mormons. You are just so tolerant and diverse and multicultural. And I really fucking hate you. I hate you with a fucking passion. I don't bother with the other side. I hate all statists equally. Except for some statists that I hate a little bit fucking more.